Okay, ready to go. Let's do Parshas Beshalach, page 366, beginning of the Parsha. The inyan that I'd like to talk to you about this morning is, or to learn with you this morning, is the bones of Yosef, the story of Yosef's bones. Now, Yosef's bones play a very short and brief, they make a short and brief appearance in the actual Chumash, but Chazal, the sages, find in this story a tremendous richness, a depth of understanding, and they weave this little incident into many, many different statements and sayings throughout really a long period of time. So let's take a look at the actual pasuk on this week's parsha, and then we're going to jump around and see where else this appears, both in the text as well as in the words of Chazal. Please come on and have a seat. The parsha begins as follows. Let's do a little context before we even begin the parsha. The Jewish people experienced the 10th plague at the end of last week's parsha. They experienced the Korban Pesach. They brought their Paschal offering. They ate their matzah. They ate everything that they needed. The Mitzrim already pounded on their doors during the death of the firstborn. They sent them out. The Torah describes they took the dough with them. They took the gold and silver that they collected from the Egyptians. And they left Ramses and they went to a place called Sukkot. All of this already happened last week, the Torah says, and their sojourn in the land of Egypt was 430 years. We have like this summary of their experiences as they left. And then we open up in this week's parasha with a description of the journey, the direction that they took. We'll start from the beginning. The first couple of psukim are just for context, not our subject this morning. When Paro sent the people out, he did not lead them derech eretz plishtim. He did not lead them in the shortest manner that would have been from the land of Egypt to the land of Canaan to go to Israel, which would have been through the land of the plishtim, Kikarovu, that was near. Why does Hashem lead them in a circuitous route? Ki amar Elokim pen yinochem ha'am bir osam milchama v'shavu mitzrayma. He was afraid that the people will reconsider, that they will see war, and they'll be afraid. And the first thing that the people who are afraid are going to do, they're going to turn right around and head back to Egypt. Therefore, vayasev Elokim esam derech hamidbar yamzuv. That's why, says the Chumash, Hashem instead directs them through the desert towards the Yam Suf, v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Mitzrayim, and the Jewish people were armed when they left.
But if you take the shortest route, there's less time to change your mind.
Yeah, except when they would have seen war, they just that's right. Good reason they would have seen a war, and they would have been out of here. We're done. We're gone. So therefore they're going out. Now they're armed. The Torah says they're armed. On that word chamushim, Rashi comments Midrashili that it was from the word chamesh, or a chamishit, a fifth, that only a fifth of the people actually left. 4/5 of the Jews died in Egypt during the plague of darkness. They did not want to leave. They were happy in the exile. They liked it where they were, and they said, we're not going anywhere. So they stayed behind. So a number, but that's the Midrashic interpretation. We're just going to leave it on the surface level. They left armed, which means they were ready to go. They had all the tools that they needed, except Hashem saw that he was afraid they were going to turn around when they would see war. So he leads them in a circuitous route. Now we have our verse, which we're going to focus on, Pasuk Yud Tes 19. Vayikach Moshes Atzmos Yosef Imo. And Moshe took the bones of Yosef with him. Ki hashbeya hishbias b'nei Yisrael imor, because Yosef had a double language firmly made the Jewish people swear that Pakod Yivkod Elokim Eschem, Hashem will remember you. Note that phrase, Pakod Yivkod Eschem, Hashem will remember, He will recall you. And when you leave, take me with you, Yosef, made the Jewish people swear. And now as we're leaving, we're taking the circuitous route, the Torah says. So Moshe grabs the bones of Yosef to take with him, because after all, that was the oath that the Jewish people had taken. And then the next verse goes on that they left Sukkot and they went to a place called Etam, which was on the edge of the desert. And then the Torah goes on to describe which will eventually be the splitting of the sea as the Egyptians pursue. And that's where we are right now. Let's take a look. This is not the first place that we've seen this. We've actually seen this before, because Yosef made the Jewish people take this oath. If you flip back a few pages to page 288, the very final psukim in Sefer Bereishis, On page 288, Yosef is, Yaakov has already died in the beginning of the parsha. Now Yosef takes his leave of this world. The last three verses, Pasuk Chaf Dalet 24. Vayomer Yosef el Echav Anochi Meis. Yosef gathers his brothers around. And he says, I'm going to die. We're in Egypt. Yosef is the second in command. He gathers his brothers and he says, this is it for me. Elokim Pakod Yifkod Eschem. Hashem will surely remember you. He will redeem you. And he's going to bring you up from this land. He's going to bring you. So Yosef is reminding his brothers. He's on his deathbed. Everybody's around him, like around this table. There's 11 brothers. And he uses that phrase, Hashem pakod yifkod eschem. Hashem's going to redeem you. He's going to remember you. And when he does, Chafhei, the next pasuk, Vayashba Yosef es b'nei Yisrael lemor. Yosef made the children of Israel swear, saying, Pakod yifkod Elokim eschem. Theha alisem es atzmosai mizeh. Hashem is going to remember you. When he does, take my bones out of here with you. Vayomas Yosef ben Me'ev Yasushanim, and then Yosef dies. Vayichantu also, and he is embalmed. Vayisem ba'aron b'mitzrayim, and he is placed in a coffin in Egypt. That's how Sefer Bereishis ends. Yosef with his brothers around him, making him swear. Please note, in verse 24, Chaf Dalet, who is Yosef speaking to? His brothers. In 25, verse 25, Chafei, who does he make take an oath? B'nai Yisrael. An interesting switch, which is a language, a much more inclusive language of B'nai Yisrael. He's speaking to his brothers, and he makes the B'nai Yisrael swear, don't leave me here. When you leave, take me with you. Okay, so that's what happened at the end of Sefer Bereishis. 100+ years pass. Yosef dies there on the spot. Beginning of Shmos begins with the death of all the other brothers. The servitude begins. We have the whole story. Moshe, he runs away to Midian. He comes back. The plagues. We're 100+ years later. And now we've left already Ramses to go to Sukkot. We had the Korban Pesach. We had the 10 plagues. Everything is done. We already baked the matzah the Torah described last week. But now the Torah is describing a circuitous route that we took. And the Torah tells us that Moshe took with him the bones of Yosef. Now, a couple of questions we would have to ask. Number one, this is an interesting placement of that verse. If you were writing the Chumash, where would you place the verse that Moshe took the bones of Yosef? Should have been last week when the Jews gathered the gold and the silver and they baked their matzah and they left. I would have put it over there. So it's a little bit of an interesting placement that it's here. But more importantly, who took the bones? Who should have taken the bones? The brothers, the Jewish people. This was a inclusive type of oath. So we're going to have to talk about specifically that as well. Let's take a look at this episode, this idea of the removal of the bones of Yosef. As I said, it's going to appear in numerous different places and manifest itself. Let's start with Rashi. Always a good place to start. Rashi says, if you want to follow me inside, I'm on the second column. I'm back on page 366, back in our Parsha, Parshas B'Shalach. On the left-hand side, Rashi says as follows. Hashbeya hishbiya. We have a double language. Yeah. He surely made them swear. Rashi points out, hishbiyem shiashbiu livnehem. He made the brothers swear that they would make their children swear to do this. So Rashi picks up on the double language, as well as he's picking up on the switch from the brothers, as we saw at the end of Sefer Bereishis, and then the language switches to the Jewish people, that there are two oaths taking place. First, the brothers around his deathbed swear they will remove him. And then Yosef made those brothers swear that not only will they do it, but they will swear, make their children swear that they'll do this to take his bones out. We'll get back to that in a moment. Let's just finish the Rashi. And then Rashi asks a question. V'lomalo ishpia banov sheyisu'u li'aretz kanan miad. Rashi says, we've seen a story like this before. Who else died on a deathbed surrounded by 12 sons? Yaakov did. And Yaakov also said, please don't bury me in Egypt. Don't leave me here. Except what did he make them do? Right then and there. Yaakov said, don't ever leave me here. Bring me to Eretz Yisrael right away and bury me there. So why does Yosef say to his brothers, it's okay. you tell your children, just don't leave me here when you leave. Why didn't Yosef say, right now, take me out, just like his father did?
Egyptians
so excellent. Rashi says, Amra Yosef, Anishalita Yisi b'Mitzrayim. I was the ruler. When my father died, Yosef says, I had the ability to do so. But my brothers and my children aren't in control like I was back then, and therefore I don't think they'll be able to. So I only ask of you to do what's possible. What's possible is when you leave, however many years, 100 years plus, but when you go, don't leave me here. My father told me to do it right now. Interestingly, his father made him swear, remember? Mm-hmm. We mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that even Yaakov made Yosef swear. Remember we said, whenever someone, if you ask somebody in authority, you say, can you do this for me? And they say, I'll try. What's the rule? It's not going to happen.
Of course.
It's not going to happen.
No commitment.
Because I try. Okay, you try. There's always a stumbling block before everything. It's always going to be difficult. I'll try means, forget it. It's not going to happen. So Yaakov makes Yosef, you swear to me you're going to do it. When you swear to someone you're going to do it, nothing will get in the way of a person who's got a commitment in their mind they're going to do it. So Yaakov knows, Yosef, you have the ability to, and if I make you do it, if you swear to me, you'll get it done. But Yosef, years later, sees there's no way he can get his brothers or his children to pull this off. So he tells them, 100 years from now, when Pakod Yifkod Eschem, when Hashem remembers you, redeems you, and takes you out, just don't forget me. Now, I just want to share a parenthetical thought. Again, Rashi points out something very interesting, that Yosef made the brothers swear to make their children swear. The Maral asks an interesting question. The Maral says, that's a funny way to speak. Like, I want you to swear to have your children do it. I would have gone one of two ways, says the Maral. Either I just make you swear, and then it's self-understood that it would continue on. Or I would say something like, you to your children and to your children's children. I would say something that would make it clear that it's a perpetuating kind of a... One generation is a funny thing. You and your children. Why does he stop there? So Maral says two interesting things. He says, we know a fact that there was a tradition that all the brothers had, that the servitude would only begin after all of their deaths. So that Yosef knew... The brothers who were standing around his deathbed, they for sure would not be the ones to take him out. Because the servitude would not have even started yet during their lifetimes, and we're waiting for the redemption at the end of the servitude. Their children were shaykh, were possible. They were in the parsha. It's possible for them to actually be part of the redemptive process. And we will see there was actually one child of the 12 Shratim who was still alive at the time. We will get to her later. So to them, that oath could take hold. To the brothers themselves, they know they can't do it. Their children could, and therefore that would already take hold and would be a fulfilling oath. He adds one more point which fleshes that out even more. Are the brothers called the Jewish people? The brothers, do they have a status of Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people? No. They're brothers. They're 12 people. They're 12 people. That's not a nation. Their children already are a nation. They're a people. We see already the shift from the end of Bereishis to the beginning of Sefer Shmos. We are an Am. We're a nation. We are an Am HaNetzach, we're an eternal nation. Now, what that means is individuals within us are not going to live forever. None of us are going to live forever. But we as a people are LeNetzach. We are forever. So Maral says, Yosef made his brother swear, but I can't end with you because you're just 12 individuals. But if you make your children swear, then that's already the Jewish people taking an oath. And when the Jewish people take an oath,
it's done.
That's forever. It's done. We don't have to go with the next generation to the next generation. It's already done. That can continue and maintain itself because we're already a nation at that point. But the 12 brothers themselves don't have that status as a nation. And therefore, the oath has to be not just to the brothers, but then the brothers have to make their children swear in order to do so.
So is it Moshe who took the oath?
Yeah.
So he was like a lady. He was like,
yeah. A great grandson. I mean, okay, even more than that, Levi. He was a great, great grandson because of Amram. So a grandson. He's a grandson.
So they were carrying around for 40 years.
No, he's a great grandson. Kahas. Yeah, he's a great grandson. Great grandson. Okay. Okay.
So they carried around then.
40 years. Yeah, we're going to talk a little more about that last as well. So for 40 years, they carried the coffin around. That's right. The Gemara actually has a whole discussion because Moshe was a Levi. So, and so he kept the coffin with him. And so the Gemara has a whole discussion as to, in terms of the laws of Tumah and Tahara, of ritual purity and impurity, in which of the three camps of the Jewish people were they allowed to keep a corpse? Because in the center camp of the Kohanim, you weren't allowed to have a dead body there, but Moshe was only a Levi. The Gemara has a whole discussion. For 40 years, Moshe took the... and we're going to get back to that in a moment. So, but let's talk about something else. Yeah.
So from where do we get that a funeral should be made?
Separate concept. No, they did. He was buried right away. But no, they needed. But where are they going to bury? They're going to bury him in the desert. He wanted to go to Israel. Yes, we're going to get to that in a moment as well. We're going to get there. I know there's a lot to talk. We're going to get there. Let's go. Here we go. We're going to go. Now, first of all, there's a lot to see within this discussion. There's a lot to say. Let's start with the following point. The Gemara, the Gemara sees. In this episode, a number of things, and let's start with this, and that is the love that Yosef had for the land of Israel. That he insisted on his final words in this world to his brothers, don't leave me here. Take me out when you go out. You have to take me with you. And where this manifests itself is a little bit later in Chumash and Sefer Bamidbar with a series of ladies, five sisters, known as the Benot Tzlafcha, the daughters of Tzlafchan. If you want to take a quick look, you flip to page 886. The Torah tells us their story, that there were five daughters of a person named Tzlafchan. And Tzlafchan had died in the desert. And when Moshe is divvying up the land, so he gave it to fathers and who had sons, and all the families got land. And these five girls didn't have any brothers. And their father had died, and they saw that they were left out. And they came to Moshe, and they said, hey, Moshe, this is not right. Our father died, we don't have any brothers, but you left us out. You didn't give us a piece of land. There's no inheritance for us. So Moshe says, I need to ask Hashem. I never heard of such a thing before. I don't know what to do. So the Torah describes in the end, Pasuk Hey, by Akrev, Moshe's Mishpaton Lefnei Hashem. Moshe brings their judgment to Hashem, and Hashem says, Kein Benot Tzlafcha Dovrot. They are 100% correct. And if there were to be such a family in which a father died and he didn't have any sons, 100% the land would go to the girls. The sages are bothered. And where did these girls get the audacity, the chutzpah, the strength to come to Moshe to say, in an era that they were in which Moshe clearly left them out, to say, where's our land? What's with us?
Good for them.
100%. I knew in a woman's shir I would get a reaction like that. I was waiting for somebody to say that. Where did it come from? So the sages pick up on the way that they're described, their lineage. When the Torah gives us a lineage, we usually get one generation, sometimes two, max three. If you go back to verse 1, Pasuk Aleph in this chapter, 886, Vatikravna benot Tzlafcha, the daughters of Tzlafcha, ben Chefer, the son of Chefer, ben Gilad, ben Machir, ben Menashe, lemishpachot Menashe, ben Yosef. Give me a, how long, Ribbono Shel Olam, do we need to go back in time? By the time we get to Menashe, we know Menashe is the son of Yosef. Yosef has two children, Ephraim and Menashe. So even if you want to go all the way back, why stop at Yosef? If you're going so far back, six, seven generations, Ben Yaakov, Ben Yitzchak, Ben Avraham, how far back? All the way to Yosef, says Rashi. First Rashi on the page, Loma Nemar, why is it relevant to trace it back to Yosef? We already know that they're the children of Menashe. We know that they're from Yosef's family. El Eloi Merlach Yosef Chibei Vesha'aretz. Yosef loved the land. Yosef was insistent on being in the land. As the Pasuk says, Veha'alitem Atzmosai. Take out my bones. Don't let me stay here. His final words. Don't leave me here. So Yosef, who loved the land, uvnosav chavivu es haaretz. So his great, great, great granddaughters also loved the land. As the pasuk says, tnu lanu achuza, give us an inheritance. Where'd they get it from? They were descendant from the Altazay, the Yosef, who was such a lover of the land. It worked its way down, so that when they were on the threshold of being left out of the land, they said, no way. That Aron that's been cupped around and carried with us for 40 years in the desert, that's our great-great-great-great-grandfather Yosef. We need a piece of land too. And so the sages trace this statement of Yosef all the way down to the Benot Slavchan, a lover of the land. Now, in a very poignant comment, very, very moving comment, the sages then follow this. They then follow this to another episode. Who does not get to go to the land?
Moshe
does not get to go to the land. Parshas Vayeschanan, at the end of Sefer Devarim, after he's told already, you hit the rock, you're not going in. And then he prays, he beseeches, he's on the threshold, he's on the cusp, he's there, he could see the land. And the Torah says, and he begs and he pleads over and over again, and Hashem says, no. The Medrash records one of his arguments. I'm going to borrow this for a moment. The Medrash on the back side of your sheet. I'm going to translate, but if you don't have it, the Medrash says this follows. Amar lefanu ribono shel olam. Moshe says, Master of the world. Atzmosav shel Yosef nichnasu la'aretz. The bones of Yosef. I've been carrying them around for 40 years. 40 years I'm schlepping these bones. And they can go in. And now I can't? It's not fair. Moshe says, 40 years I've carrying these bones. And you can imagine amongst all of the moments of Moshe's final days on this earth, where he climbs up to the mountain and he gets to see, imagine the moment where he hands off the bones to someone else. 40 years he's been carrying them, waiting to fulfill the promise of Yosef to be able to be buried in the land. His great-great-great-great-granddaughters, with that koach, with that strength, to say to him, we also want a piece of the land. And now all Moshe wants is to go into the land. And he says, Ribono Shel Olam, 40 years, I'm carrying these bones, and they get to go in. Why can't I? His response, Hashem says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mi Shehode Be'artzo, Nikbar Be'artzo. He who is, Hode is a hard word to translate here, acknowledges, associates with his land, can be buried with his land. Mishelo hoda ba'artzo, but he who does not acknowledge or associate with his land cannot merit to be buried in the land. Says the Medrash, what is this referring to? This is the Medrash and Medrash Rabban in Devarim. Yosef hoda ba'artzo. How do we know that Yosef acknowledged and associated himself with the land? Minayin, from where do we see that? Because when Eshet Potiphar, when Potiphar's wife tried to solicit him and he runs away, she says to her master, Ru'u hevi lanu ish ivri. We brought to us this Jew to be with us. Velokafar, and Yosef didn't deny that he was an ish ivri, he was a Jewish man. Not only that, he acknowledged when he was thrown into jail, he said, Gunov gunavti me'eretz ha'ivrim. I have been stolen from the land of the Jews. That's where I'm from, that's who I am. So he who acknowledges, who identifies, will be buried in the land. However, you, Minayin, and how do we see that he was buried in the land? As the pasuk in Yehoshua, when the Jews actually enter in the land, says, V'yas atzmos Yosef asher halu b'nei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, kavru b'shchem. And the bones that the Jews had taken out of the land of Egypt, they indeed buried in Shchem. However, at, says the Medrash, you, Moshe, shelo hodesa ba'artzecha, you did not acknowledge, admit, associate with your land, cannot merit to be buried there. Kate said, where do we see that? There was a story, if you remember, when Moshe first runs out of Egypt, he runs to a place called Midian, and he runs into a lady, a young lady by the well, the daughter of Yisro, and they were being pestered by the local shepherds, and Moshe saves them, and they come home early to their father, because they got everything done quickly with Moshe, and he says to them, oh, what are you doing here so fast? How did that happen? And they said, Ish Mitzri Hitzilonu Miyad Haroim. An Egyptian man saved us. For who Shomei and you Moshe heard, Vishosek, and you were silent. You identified, or you didn't even say it yourself. You allowed yourself to be identified as an Egyptian. Lefikach lo nikbar be'artzo, you will not be buried in the land. A very poignant, medrash, especially to those of us who happen to be living here outside the land. There's a very famous, very, very, very famous phrase that's used to describe the Jews. Do you identify, I'll use, as a Canadian Jew or a Jewish Canadian? There is a world of difference between those two. Canadian Jew says, I'm an Ivri. I am a Jew. I happen to be of a Canadian flavor. That's where I was born. That's where I live. But I am a Jew. I belong to the Jewish people. I belong to the land of Israel. And I'm just waiting to go home. A Jewish Canadian says, I am a Canadian. That's who I am. Sounds I happen like to be of a Jewish flavor.
No.
If I say Jew first...
Not first. Jewish, it's a Jew, Jewish defines
it's
as Canadian.
Adjective.
Correct. It becomes an adjective. Exactly. Oh. So the Medrash says, what merited?
Whoa.
Where was the merit? Moshe Rabbeinu carrying these bones for 40 years. And he gets stopped at the border and he has to hand the bones off to someone else.
The border.
And he says, the bones go in and not me. Hashem says, the bones, Yosef, who was Mechavev Haaretz, who loved the land, who identified with the land, who was an Ish Ivri, even as he was living in Egypt, will indeed merit to be buried. But you allowed yourself to be identified as an Ish Mitzri. You were an Egyptian man. And you will not merit to actually have your bones bought in a very, very powerful, moment. A powerful moment. Okay.
Gosh, I guess it's very
this time we thought he wasn't allowed in because he
did. It's true. They're both true. In other words, the pasuk says you hit the rock, and now he's pleading, "Let me in, let me in, let me in." It says you can't. Can't go in. Can't go in. Now. One other point. A couple more points. The verse, the Medrash quoted a pasuk. Listen carefully to the Medrash. I read it quickly before. This is in Sefer Yehoshua. When the Sefer Yehoshua is the first book of Tanakh, after the Jews, the five books of Moshe are complete, Yehoshua leads the Jews in. The Navi describes all of the wars, the dividing up of the land, and the settling. And then the verse said, which we read in a moment, V'yes atzmot Yosef asher he'elu b'nei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, the bones of Yosef that the Jews took out of Egypt, Kavru b'Shchem, they buried in Shchem.
Who's there?
Ah, now you have a problem. Who took the bones out of Egypt?
Moshe.
It says very clearly, we just read it. Vayikach Moshe atzmos Yosef. Moshe took the bones. He was involved with it for 40 years. And then the Navi says that the Jewish people took the bones out of... What do you mean? Why do I not give credit to Moshe? The Gemara asks this question. The Gemara says a fascinating thing. The Gemara says, anyone who starts a mitzvah and does not complete it, and someone else completes the mitzvah, nikra al shem sofo. It's called and accredited to the person who completed it. And Moshe, who had to hand the bones off to someone else, when he went and died in the deserts, someone else, the Jewish people, then were the ones to complete the process and be the ones to actually bury. You know what I'm saying? We're not blaming it as a fault. It's not his fault, it's just that he didn't complete the mitzvah, and therefore the identifying phrase is the Jewish people were the ones who took the bones out and buried him, because they were the ones who actually brought the mitzvah to fruition, they brought it to its completion.
He doesn't get any schar for it?
I didn't say he didn't get any schar, I said the mitzvah is called Al Shem Gomro. The mitzvah is identified as having been completed by that person. I'm not saying like getting any schar, I'm just saying that that's what it is referred to. Okay, next. Now, the pasuk describes this as if Moshe just needed to get some bones, and he took them.
It doesn't mean that he doesn't get them.
And he doesn't get the scars.
He gets
more merit,
but he does get merit.
But not as much.
Okay. Okay, the Gemara says as follows. Now, the way the Torah describes this is as if time came and Moshe went and grabbed the bones and they left. The Gemara says, not so simple. The Gemara Masechet Sota says, come see how dear mitzvahs were to Moshe. We saw the language of chavivos when it comes to the land of Israel and Yosef. And the Gemara says, what about doing mitzvahs, how chaviv, how dear it was to Moshe? Shekol Yisrael kulon nisasku babiza. All of the people were busy with the spoils of Egypt, getting the gold and the silver and the clothing and all of the things. V'hu nisasek b'mitzvos. But he was nisasek with a different mitzvah. He was busy toiling with a different mitzvah, as the pasuk says, "Chacham lev yikach mitzvos." The wise-hearted person will grab mitzvos. Some of us spend our life trying to grab money or whatever else we try to grab, but we don't take any of that with us. And a wise-hearted person spends his life trying to grab mitzvos. So all the Jews are running around grabbing the gold and the silver. And how do where did the sages pick this up on? Because who had the oath to take the bones of Yosef? Upon whom was it incumbent?
All of them.
The 11 brothers all made their children swear, when the time comes, you take him out. And now who's the only one doing it? Moshe. So the sages ask, where is everybody?
When you need them.
So they were all busy collecting the gold and the silver. Excellent. God told them to do so 100%. So there are mitzvahs and there are mitzvahs. So when they had a choice between the mitzvah of the gold and the silver and the mitzvah of taking the aron of Yosef, the coffin of Yosef, so they all ran for the gold and the silver and left Moshe alone to grab the bones of Yosef. The Gemara asks, Uminayin haviyodeya Moshe heichan Yosef kover. Where did Moshe know where he was buried? It's 100 years. How did he know where he was? Where was Yosef? So the Gemara says as follows. Amru Serach Bas Asher. There was a woman named Serach Bat Asher. Serach, the daughter of Asher. Asher was one of the 12 tribes, the 12 brothers, and he has a daughter, Serach. A harpist. Excellent. She tells him, Nishtaira me oso ador. She was a remnant from that previous generation, a very old woman. Halach Moshe etzla. Moshe goes to see her and says to her, Klumat yodat heichan Yosef. You know where Yosef is? We're running around Mitzrayim. Everybody's running around. It's got gold. So I need to take the bones of Yosef. Where are they? Amrelo, she says, Aron shel matechas osolo mitzrim. The Egyptians made it a metal casket. Remember the very last pasuk in Sefer Bereishis? They involved them. They put him in an aron. The kavu bin Nilo Sanan. They dropped it into the bottom of the Nile. Kadeshi Yisbarchu Meimav, so that its water should be blessed. Yosef was a sign of blessing in Egypt. So when he died, they wanted to connect him to the source of their blessing. Their livelihood came from the Nile. So they covered him in an iron casket, and they dropped him down into the Nile so that the water should be blessed. So Halach Moshe, so she shows him where to go. Halach Moshe, and he stands and he says, Yosef, the time has come for us to leave. Show yourself so that we can take you. And if you don't appear, he says, then we are cleansed from our oath. We're trying to find you, but you got to help us out. Gemara says, miraculously, Yosef's casket rose to the top, and Moshe takes him with him. So, says the Gemara, was the help of Serach Bat Asher. Now, Serach Bat Asher appears. Her name is listed in Chumash. But she appears, she doesn't really do anything in the story of Chumash, but she appears in the sages, in the works of the Medrash, several important times. One of which is, as you mentioned, she was a harpist. So the first time she appears in the Medrash is when the brothers return from Egypt with the news that Yosef is indeed alive. And they have a certain challenge in front of them. They have a very elderly father who has been mourning for 22 years with the intensity of the day of death, his son Yosef's death. And now they need to convey to him that not only is he alive, he's ruling over all of Egypt. And that we were the ones who sold him. How do you pull that off? How do you convey that to him? So they came up with a plan. Serach, their niece, she was a daughter of Asher, she's one of the daughters by the 11 brothers, was a harpist. So they had her play music to calm Yaakov, who was anyway always sad and mourning. And they had her play music and add words that Yosef is alive to the song. Sing about Yosef being alive. So that Yaakov would say, it's not true, can't be. But you're going to introduce the dialogue, you'll introduce the conversation, and she does so, and as such, then the brothers come in and they're able to tell it to him, and he's able to bear the news. So the sages attribute that episode, that was Serach Bat Osher, who was the harpist, who was able to convey through her music and her song the beginnings of the idea that Yosef might in fact be alive. And in that merit, the sages say she merited to live an exceptionally long life. As we see, she's still appearing. There's 110, 120 years later, when they're leaving Egypt, she's still around. So we see her, the one breaking the news. We see her, the one telling Moshe where the coffin was. There's a third time that she appears, which is the code word, which is, how do we know when Hashem has come to redeem the Jewish people? Pakod Yifkod Eschem, the double language, he will remember and redeem you. So the sages say there was a code that was transmitted from Yosef to his brothers that was held in secret. This is how we'll know that is indeed the actual redemption. When the Redeemer comes and says, Pakod Yifkod Eschem, Hashem has come, that's the sign. Hashem uses that to Moshe, and Moshe indeed says that when he comes to Egypt for the first time to tell the Jewish people. And we know, who was the holder of that code word to know that this was the deal? The sages say, Serach Bat Asher, the remnant, the elderly woman from the literal who grew up in the house of Yaakov Avinu, a granddaughter of Yaakov, the one who told him that Yosef was alive, she's the holder of the secret key, that this is the phrase to know that this is indeed the redemption. And she's the one who shows Moshe where the casket of Aaron is. There's a fourth time where she appears in the words of the sages where she has an opinion as to how when the sea split and the Jews walk through. In this week's parsha, she has an opinion as exactly what the walls look like. The sages were arguing what the walls were, and she expresses an opinion as to how that happened. That's Serach Bat Asher. Now, I want to share with you a really beautiful thought from Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, a Rav in Montreal who's written many, many, many books.
He's from Montreal.
Really? Really?
No.
Sorry, Milwaukee, from Milwaukee. Sorry. He asked an interesting question. He says, when the sages say that Moshe didn't know where Yosef was, he's running around, everybody's running around, but he's looking for the bones of Yosef, and he can't find them. So, what should he have done? What would have been a logical thing, given what we know about Moshe? What could he have done at the time? Can I ask Hashem? That's what he did with the doors at Slavchad, right? He talks all the time, when you don't know what's going on. So, you know,
ask him.
Where's Yosef? So he says a magnificent thing. He says, Hashem doesn't tell him where he is, where Yosef is. Doesn't say anything. There's certain things in life that you can't read about, can't learn about. You have to experience yourself. At this moment, he writes, the Jews are about to leave Mitzrayim. Moshe's about to take them out. It's been 210 years in Egypt proper. And here is the fulfillment of, since the time of Avram, 400 years since Avram was promised that you're going to get this land, I'm going to give it to you, to your children, to your grandchildren. It's a long wait, because Avram was promised as well that your children are going to be foreigners in a strange land, they're going to be oppressed. And Hashem doesn't tell Moshe anything. And instead, he makes Moshe, you go find out that woman, that the Baba of the community, the one who was there in Yaakov's house, the one who was there during all those moments of suffering for Yosef, the one who was there who told Yaakov, Yosef is still alive. This is a long story that we're beginning a part of. It doesn't, you can't understand the story in slithers. That woman who's been here in Mitzrayim all 100 years, who's been the holder of the secret of Pakod, Yivkod, Eschem, Hashem will surely redeem you. That woman who knows where Yosef is, you go find her. You speak to her directly. You have her show you where those bones are. Let her be the one who's witnessed this whole story play itself out. She's going to be the one to tell you where Yosef. I'm not going to tell you. I want you to be with her. Because you now have the task of leading the Jews to the desert. And this story, which again doesn't go in slithers, it goes in long chunks of time, is beginning. And you need her to be at the front of that story. So you go meet with her. let her be the one to tell you where the bones are. I'll conclude with one last thought, which ties right into that. Moshe leads for 40 years with the bones of Yosef with him. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who's on the sheet that I gave you on the other side, asks a question in verse 19, which we asked earlier. Why is this fact mentioned here in our parsha? This fact that Moshe took the bones should have been mentioned last week when the Jews are gathering the gold and the silver and they're taking their dough and they're baking their dough and they left. That's when it should have been mentioned. And here it's mentioned in the context of we're already out and Hashem says, instead of taking you in the short way, I'm going to take you in a circuitous way. Why here? This isn't where it should have been, this one verse about the bones. It should have been in last week's parsha. Says Rav Hirsch, perhaps the Torah wants to emphasize the contrast. It's here for a reason. Because the first two verses of our parsha, Hashem leads us in a circuitous way. What's he afraid of? That we're so afraid, despite the fact that we're armed, despite the fact that he just did a full year of miracles, despite the fact that everything is just taking place, that as soon as we see a battle, we're going to turn right around and head back to Egypt. Says Rav Hirsch, 600,000 armed men on their way to take possession of the land which was promised to them by God still could not have been trusted to have sufficient confidence in that promise as soon as they would face any type of opposition. That's what Hashem sees in us. I promised you, I'm going to give you this land. I've taken every step. It clearly shows this promise is going to happen. I can't take you the short route because you're going to see a war, you're going to run. Therefore, whereas the true Jew, they could not have the promise to feel secure in the victory. Just even on the virtue of that promise wasn't enough. Whereas the true Jew, says Rav Hirsch, like Yosef, looks with full assurance even beyond his death to the fulfillment of God's promises and finds that his trust has indeed not been misplaced. You know why this verse is here? Suggests Rav Hirsch, as we head off into the desert to begin our 40-year series of complaints and stumblings and lack of faith and lack of trust. But you know what's going to lead you along the way? You're going to look up every morning at the front of your camp are going to be the bones of Yosef. Yosef who said, Pakod Yivkod Eschem, he's going to take you out. I'm going to be stuck in Egypt for over 100 years. But when you leave, and you will leave, because he's going to fulfill the promise that he made, you take me with you. It's going to be Serach who's going to be the one to show Moshe this is where the bones are. And that's going to be at the head of our camp for every day of our journey. Even until the day of Moshe's death, when he says, I can't even go in with you. And then he hands the bones off to the people and says, you now need to carry this to fruition. You're going to take it across, finish this process and bury him in the land of Israel. But that's going to be our landmark in the beginning of this process, that Hashem will fulfill his promise. It's going to be a long journey. The promise will be kept. Pakod Yivkod Eschem, and as the bones of Yosef will lead us, we will be stops and journeys along the way. But don't ever forget that that's where we're going to end up, into the land that Hashem has promised us. Wish you all a wonderful day.